The Holy Gospel comes from the 24th chapter of Matthew. But about that day and hour no one knows, neither the angels of heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. For as the days of Noah were, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. For as in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day Noah entered the ark, and they knew nothing until the flood came and swept them all away. So too will be the coming of the Son of Man. Then two will be in the field, one will be taken and one will be left. Two women will be grinding meal together, one will be taken and one will be left. Keep awake, therefore, for you do not know on what day your Lord is coming. But understand this. If the owner of the house had known in what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and would not have let his house be broken into. Therefore, you also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an unexpected hour. The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. You can go ahead and be seated, except for any student. Put on the armor of light. It's kind of an interesting phrase that Paul uses. Put on the armor of light. Let us then lay aside the works of darkness and put on the armor of light. And then Jesus tells us to keep awake and be ready. So there's lots of light, lots of, I would argue, hope. Because that's what I think light, unless you're a bat, I think light is hopeful. You know, that's why we light candles. Light is a good thing. It gets us out of the darkness, or at least points us to something beyond the darkness. So this is the kind of what I was thinking about Advent as a whole. And for this particular Sunday in Advent, because you have this, you know, you have Isaiah and you have Paul, and then you have this gospel reading where he talks about the end, the second coming of Jesus. So this is what I thought for a summary. We know the story and start at the end to get to the beginning of the hope for the world. And it's not the end of the world, but it's the beginning of a new thing. It's hope. That's what hope is. So we had a seminary mate named Mike Coffees. I've mentioned him before. I've read stuff from him before. He wrote a poem about hope. But I want you to think about hope because his poem has to do partly with tone. So, John, can you do the thing that I talked about right now? Just get to it. We'll get to it. And I'll read the poem. I'll read the poem first, and then I want you to hear what it. So you ready? Or do you want to talk about shoes?
This is your show.
Okay. So here's the poem. Hope is a blue note on a jazz-worn clarinet, a chromatic piano chord dissonant and handsome, a minor modal song sung diaphragmatically strong, a silence between hymn and homiletic puzzling. It holds the day in a mitre-cornered frame, setting off the eyes of the hopeful like sapphires. Hope is a run-on sentence, waiting for some punctuation to signify an end or a pause or an unknowing or an exclamation of what is yet to come that is better or beautiful or at least makes what is now worth the long, melodic, sorrowful, endless, wonderful wait. That was his understanding of hope. Hope is the minor key. We're in the minor key season. So give me the We Three Kings song that you did. And then compare that now to a major key. Major key? The song that you were going to sing. The song that you were going to do with Benjamin. Yeah.
Thank you.
you. Thank you. See, now that's hope. That's hope right there. That's light. That's putting on the armor of light right there. When we sing those festive songs, it's a beautiful thing. And, you know, if you can't at least be slightly hopeful with that song, well, then maybe you are a bat. And that's okay, because bats are part of creation. Sometimes you need to be a bat. But the light gives us hope. We know the story and start at the end to get to the beginning of the hope for the world. Not the end of the world, but a beginning. Hope. So then I came across this quote from Frederick. I don't know how to say his last name. I've never heard him say his last name. Buchner? Does that sound right? Buchner? Frederick Buchner? Buechner? Buechner. I think that's the right way to say it, Buechner. So this is a thing he wrote on Advent from Whistling in the Dark. That's one place you find this. This is what he says. The house lights go off and the footlights come on. Even the chattiest stop chattering as they wait in the darkness for the curtain to rise. In the orchestra pit, the violin bows are poised. The conductor has raised his baton. In the silence of a midwinter dusk, there is far off in the deeps of it, somewhere a sound so faint that for all you can tell, it may be only the sound of the silence itself. You hold your breath to listen. You walk up the steps to the front door. The empty windows at either side of it tell you nothing, or almost nothing. For a second, you catch a whiff in the air of some fragrance that reminds you of a place you've never been in, a time you have no words for. You are aware of the beating of your heart. The extraordinary thing that is about to happen is matched only by the extraordinary moment just before it happens. Advent is the name of that moment. The Salvation Army Santa Claus clangs his bell. The sidewalks are so crowded you can hardly move. Exhaust fumes are the chief fragrance in the air. And everyone is as bundled up against any sense of what all the fuss is really about as they are bundled up against the wind chill factor. But if you concentrate just for an instant, far off in the deeps of yourself, somewhere you can feel the beating of your heart. For all its madness and lostness, not to mention your own, you can hear the world itself holding its breath and waiting and seeing the light and yearning and longing for hope. We know the story and start at the end to get to the beginning of the hope of the world. Not the end of the world, but a beginning. Hope. Amen.